The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walser, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Coming up, I'll make the case that Trump and DeSantis both need to stop fighting. They need each other for the GOP to win in 2024. I'll evaluate the somber implication of China Xi's pledge to Putin that change is coming after 100 years. I'll contemplate the woke revision of Agatha Christie's novels as a sort of literary murder of a classic novelist. Hey, if you're listening to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or Google, make sure to hit the subscribe button. If you're watching on Rumble, please do the same. I'd appreciate it. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
I've been gone for a week, and during that week, some ongoing skirmishes between Trump and DeSantis that I want to comment on and take stock of. So on the DeSantis side, we saw two things going on. The first is the interview with Piers Morgan and also a statement that DeSantis issued. And the combined effect is DeSantis is making a case, a critique of Trump, saying in effect, look, he had a lot of good ideas, but he didn't do all of them. And there's too much personal drama. And I'm the opposite of that. I get things done. I'm not interested in drama. I am a doer, not a talker. I don't make myself the center of attention. And all of this, look, there's some merit in it, clearly. At the same time, it rang hollow because it was so ill-timed. There was a lot of talk last week about an imminent arrest of Trump. Now, that has pushed into this week. We'll see what happens. But nevertheless, on the verge of this unprecedented event, a former president, the leading figure in the Republican Party, being put into handcuffs, for DeSantis to come out charging, I mean, it was just ill-advised and ill-timed and showed a certain kind of lead-footedness that we haven't seen that much of from DeSantis. Now, on the Trump side, Trump came out and said, well, I think it's very unlikely that DeSantis will be my running mate. Trump goes on to say that he's a very mediocre governor. Yeah, Florida's done pretty well, but did pretty well before, and he's got a lot of sunshine. That's why people like Florida. And in my view, this is also misguided. And it's misguided because actually DeSantis has been a very good governor. He's not a rhino. He is right when he says that he's been very effective. He's a vast improvement over his predecessors. We're lucky to have him in Florida. Now, the reason I think that Trump and DeSantis need to cut this out and at least start talking to each other is because I don't know if either of them can win without the other. Let's explore these two scenarios. First scenario, Trump is the nominee. But Trump is the nominee in part because he bludgeons DeSantis, he bloodies up DeSantis, he launches this kind of it's me or him attack, and the MAGA people stay with Trump, and it's the mainstream of the Republican Party. So Trump gets the nomination, but he doesn't get the whole Republican Party. And there are a lot of people who like DeSantis who are really annoyed that not only to see a rival that they like, but to see the next generation being bashed by Trump. No good leader kind of mops up the next generation. The idea is that you cultivate the next generation. So these people go, we're really injured. We're going to stay home on election day. And then we lose in 2020. 2024. Option two, DeSantis wages a kind of scorched earth battle against Trump. He's able to peel off Trump voters. Trump voters begin to think, listen, it's, you know what, DeSantis can win. Trump is too radioactive. Trump is facing so many investigations. Kind of the arguments that many of the DeSantis people make. But you leave all the MAGA enthusiasts of Trump, people who love Trump, feeling betrayed, feeling angry, feeling that Trump deserved his vindication. And they're like, we're going to stay home. We're not going to vote for DeSantis. So this is just a complete disaster either way. And now consider the possibility of Trump and DeSantis somehow teamed up, working on the same team, recognizing that they have differences, but nevertheless, putting them aside for the good of the party and the good of the country. Seems to me that is the strongest ticket with the best prospects for winning in 2024. Inflation has consequences as the Fed raises interest rates to combat out-of-control government spending. Long-term bonds have diminished in value, crippling banks. Depositors are holding their breath. Investors are bailing on bank stocks. Diversification has never been more important. The recent surge in gold prices shows why gold has historically been a great hedge against the stock market and against inflation. The only company I trust to help you diversify into gold is Birch Gold Group. I buy my gold from them because I want a safety net for my family. You can do the same. Text Dinesh to 989898 to get a free information kit on gold. Birch Gold will help you convert an IRA or a 401k that's tied to a volatile market into an IRA in physical precious metals, gold and silver. And the best part, it's tax sheltered. Text Dinesh to 989898 to claim your free information kit on gold today. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of happy customers. Birch Gold is who Debbie and I trust to protect our future and yours. Text Dinesh to 989898. Today. An important meeting just took place between China Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin. The meeting was in Russia, and it was I think we might look back and see this as an epochal event. Now, Biden on his own at around the same time was meeting with Trudeau in Canada, but this was a frivolous meeting. In fact, here's Trudeau. He's like, I brought you some chocolates that were made by some immigrants. And so this was the kind of nonsense going back and forth between these two political midgets. And in the meantime, a much more statesmanlike meeting in which we heard that, quote, change is coming that hasn't happened in 100 years. Now, that's the kind of statement that gets your attention and makes you think. There's a massive kind of reshaping taking place in the world. And the United States, which has had the dominant position in the world, is losing it and losing it very rapidly. Think of how the world looks different in just 10 or 20 years. If you looked at, for example, the per capita GDP between the United States and China, the United States was way ahead, three times as much as China. And the Chinese are now catching up. And in terms of purchasing power, they're fairly close to catching up. They'll probably catch up in the next 10 or 15 years. And let's remember that China has a much larger population. So if the per capita spending power of each Chinese family is the same as each American family, but there are three times as many Chinese families, the Chinese will have a vastly bigger economy than the United States. And that means they can put a lot more into defense, a lot more into research and technology. There are just long-term implications. I mean, it's very hard to say that the 21st century belongs to America in the same way that the 20th century most clearly did. Now, the worst thing about all this, some of it would happen by itself, is that Biden is driving it. He is pushing Putin and Xi closer together. He is actually creating more powerful enemies, long-term enemies, for the United States. He's also taking countries like India, which have traditionally been friendly to the United States, at least friendly for the past couple of decades, and causing them to have second thoughts. In part, this is because of the Biden regime's ruthless prosecution of gay rights and LGBTQ and attempts to tie foreign aid to the embrace of all this sort of transgender stuff. And the Africans are recoiling, and the Indians are recoiling, and the Asians are recoiling. And basically, Putin himself is saying that if you are a member of a traditional culture and you believe in traditional values, the United States is now your deadly your deadly enemy. And so here we have Xi and Putin talking about creating, quote, a special relationship and a, quote, no limits friendship. So what does that mean? It means that China and Russia are going to partner on a multiplicity of fronts. This is not a case of a moderate alliance. They happen to agree on Ukraine, or they happen to agree that they should share technology. No, they're investing in each other's infrastructure. Now, I would say that for the first time, the senior partner of this relationship is China. Russia is in a kind of subordinate position. And the long-term implications of this, as I say, reach far and wide. Here's an example of what I mean. I pick up this article from the Indian press. India and Bangladesh, two countries that are traditionally pro-Western, have agreed to start moving away from the dollar in their mutual transactions. So typically, for example, if the Bangladeshis would spend money in India, the money would be converted into dollars and then from dollars into Indian rupees. So kind of a double transaction. Similarly, if Bangladesh did exports and imports with India, the exports would be converted into dollars and converted back into rupees and vice versa. The Bangladeshi currency is called the taka. But the Indians and the Bangladeshis have suddenly realized, wait a minute, why are we doing this double conversion? Why don't we just create a system where we cut out the dollar completely and we just deal on a bilateral basis with each other? And so, so the Indians and Bangladeshis are, as we speak, working this out. And that means that the dollar, this is a small snapshot of how the dollar is losing its status. Again, and this is not directly related to China. It's not directly related to Russia. It just shows that the emergence of BRICS, this kind of new alliance of Brazil, and Russia and India and China and South Africa, these BRICS nations, is now convincing countries to start dumping the dollar or ditching the dollar. The New York Times, in commenting on all this, and I might talk more about this tomorrow, basically says, China's making a huge mistake. China has come to its current position by making an alliance with the West, by trading with the West. So Xi is committing a strategic blunder. This, I think, reveals the parochialism and narrowness of the New York Times, not of Xi. Xi completely realizes that he's not in the same position as Deng Xiaoping in the 1970s. For Deng Xiaoping, yes, given the fact that the Chinese economy was in stasis, he had to open up China to the West. In fact, he needed a market for Chinese products. So all of that needed to happen over the past 50 years. But the point is, it has happened. And China now, I think correctly, is betting, we no longer need the West. The West is more divided and more irresponsible and more unadmirable than ever before. We can create a new system, and a lot of countries in the world are going to be attracted to our way of doing things. Bank failures, record inflation, mass layoffs, a recipe for disaster if your investments are with a typical financial advisor. But my friend Rebecca Walzer, by the way, she's coming up a little later on the podcast to talk about bank failures and talk about the dollar as a reserve currency. Well, Rebecca Walzer is a wealth strategist. She's a tax attorney. She has her global MBA from the London School of Economics. She's told her clients to get out of equities back at the end of 2021. She got it right when most advisors got it wrong. And who had to pay the price? You as the consumer, don't let blind loyalty leave you losing money. Call her office today to protect your wealth from the market uncertainty. Go to friendofdinesh.com to book a call with her team today. That's friendofdinesh.com to protect your investments. A terrible mass shooting by a transgender domestic terrorist. Shooting up Christian families and Christian kids at a Christian school. Now, I put it this way because this is not the way it appears in virtually any headline that you read about this incident. I have a list of headlines here from various newspapers, and there are two key missing words in these headlines. Number one, you don't see the word transgender. And number two, you don't see the word Christian. So the typical headline is something like, hang on, let me pull it up right here, but something like six dead in shooting incident. Well, here we go. And yes, no mention of transgender, no mention of Christian. And in fact, there were some corrections in a bunch of newspapers, corrections on MSNBC, USA Today, and so on. And the correction was about misgendering the shooter. So USA Today, police on Monday afternoon said that the shooter was a transgender man. Officials had initially misidentified the gender of the shooter. So, in other words, the shooter is a biological woman who was in transition to becoming a man. Apparently it was, was it Audrey Hale, I believe is the name of the shooter. And she was in the process of becoming, I forget the male name now. But geez, this is the focus of the correct. They're worried about the feelings of the transgender perpetrator. Of course, no references to domestic terrorism. And CNN goes, and this is still up on CNN, officials are really struggling to figure out the motive. Well, let's see. Christian school, Christian kids being massacred. Really sad. The pastor's own daughter, he's got like three boys and one, the only girl, 9 years old. Now think of that family and what they have to live through in the aftermath of all this. And you got a trans shooter. And by the way, a lot of conservatives knew right away that that's what it was. But the cops were like, there's a female shooter. People were like, female shooter? Female mass shootings are just not all that common. Generally, you need testicles to do a mass shooting. And apparently here you have a female who was in the process of trying to get some testicles and was trying to undergo this and a planned attack. The official said from the beginning, this is a planned attack. We now know that not only was there a sort of the shooter had maps, but the shooter also had a sort of a statement, a manifesto. The full statement has not been released, and so I'm waiting to see what it says. But what I have seen is the shooter, who, by the way, here's the male name, Aiden. So apparently Audrey was becoming Aiden. And here's the shooter from Facebook saying, I'm planning to die today. This is not a joke, all caps. You'll probably hear about me on the news after I die. This is my last goodbye. And one day this will make more sense. I've left more than enough evidence behind, but something bad is about to happen. So here the shooter is telegraphing motives, saying, I'm about to do something terrible. I'm going to die. But no one picks up on this. No action is really taken. And then, of course, you have the terrible incident itself. Now, it's worth noting that this stuff, I'm talking about people who are in some sort of sexual transition, being perpetrators of terrible incidents, this is not uncommon. Colorado Springs shooter. Remember, after the shooter's name was revealed and people started looking the shooter up, the shooter is non-binary. The Denver shooter, trans. The Aberdeen shooter, trans. And now the Nashville shooter, trans. And all of this should be understood against the wake of these trans activists who basically now have T-shirts which have trans on them and automatic weapons shown on the T-shirt. By the way, I saw today on social media, these T-shirts are still being sold on Amazon. Very interesting. They haven't been taken down. They haven't. And not to mention the trans slogan, which is essentially that you accept the trans or you die. Think about that. Think about the implications of saying that. Think about the murderous intent. Think about all the media reports that have told these trans people that, listen, you're being targeted. People are out to get you. Trans death rates are the highest. Well, trans death rates are high because of trans suicides. That's true. There is a high rate of trans suicides, but the cause of those trans suicides, on the other hand, is far more complex. So what I'm getting at is that I think we're facing a real mental health crisis in the country. It's not limited to the trans, of course. It's a broader crisis. It's not a crisis of guns. And in fact, the left, when this first happened, I think they thought they had a kind of, from their point of view, from the gun control point of view, an ideal incident. Oh, wow, another mass shooting. Oh, wow, it's a female, first female mass shooter. They thought this is going to lead to a push for gun control like nothing before. And then, whoops, it turned turns out that the perpetrator's trans. This kind of spoils the narrative because why? You have a trans mass murderer, a trans domestic terrorist targeting Christian kids. And so that's why the headlines are so reticent about all this. But reticent or not, I think people can see, and this is the benefit now of free speech and Twitter, where you're able to discuss these things. That is, in fact, the truth of the matter. Debbie and I gained a bunch of weight. I'm not telling you exactly how much. Too much. During COVID, we decided it was time to drop some pounds. We started the PhD weight loss and nutrition program 8 weeks ago. Debbie has already lost 10 pounds, and I am down more than 16. Wow. The program is based on science and nutrition. No injections, no pills, no hours in the gym, no severe calorie restriction, just good, sound, scientifically proven nutrition. It's so simple. They make it easy by providing 80% of your food at no additional cost. They tell you when and what to eat. And guess what? You can do this without ever being hungry. The founder, Dr. Ashley Lucas, has her PhD in chronic disease and sports nutrition. She's also a registered dietitian. She helps people lose weight, get healthy, and most important, maintain that weight loss for life. If you're ready to lose that excess weight for the last time, call PhD Weight Loss and Nutrition. Here's the number, 864-644-1900. You can also find them online at myphdweightloss.com. The number to call, 864-644-1900. Guys, I'm delighted to welcome back to the podcast my friend Rebecca Walser. She's a wealth strategist. She's a tax attorney, best-selling author. She has her MBA from the London School of Economics. She's also the podcast host of Crashes and Taxes. Rebecca, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thanks, Nash. Glad to be here.
I was really struck by the somber declaration, both by Xi of China and Putin, that change is coming after 100 years. Now, I think that that refers to a lot of different things. The rebalancing of power, China's accumulation of military strength, its ability to exercise power in the South China Sea. But there's certainly an economic dimension here that they're referring to. And I think specifically it is that they're creating a new coalition, it seems, to break free of the U.S. dollar. And I thought there's no one better. In fact, when you came on last time, you were talking about this exact thing. So tell us where we are now, what is happening, and what can we look forward to over the next several months?
Yes, Dinesh, such a huge thing. So we did call it, you're right. But this has been really in process, I'd say in earnest for sure for the last 20 years. Obviously, this is a longer term trajectory. Obviously, we got the Federal Reserve with the 1913, you know, commission of the Federal Reserve, which is a private corporation. It's not a U.S. government entity, as many people mistake and believe that it is. It's got a private charter from 1913 from Congress. And then 1944, the Bretton Woods New Hampshire agreement, where the U.S. would be pegged to basically gold, and therefore instead of pegging all currencies to gold, other currencies would be pegged to the U.S. dollar at 35 cents an ounce for gold. So we had the gold standard. And then you fast forward to 1971, when Richard Nixon finally took us off the gold standard. And then you move to 1974, where we tried to once again tether our currency creation opportunity that we then had with full-on fiat currency tied to no hard assets for the first time. We tried to make a tie to black oil, crude oil, so black gold, if you will, so that we still had this ability to not untether completely and go crazy. And over time, that is greatly diminished. And so what you have seen is China is probably the most strategic thinking country in the history of time. They literally have mathematicians, economists, scientists, war games, you know, war strategists. They have all of these people together, multidisciplinary strategies, multi-year, long-term, 50-year plans. And so between their Shanghai Development Corporation, their Belt and Road Project, which is an infrastructure project which crosses multiple countries, really starts to bring in, and then you look at BRICS, which is the ultimate alignment, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, which has picked up so much of the world in the last, since 2020. What we're seeing, Dinesh, is a migration of countries moving away from the West payment systems, the SWIFT systems, the NATO country alliance, the Five Eyes, Australia, New Zealand, England, America, Canada, that group that really is the power behind NATO. This is moving away. And you've got about 80% of the population of the world moving towards the BRICS nations and the BRICS foundation that they're creating. And so we are at the point now where America, unfortunately, we were a little bit too egotistical. We were a little bit too big for our britches. We believed too much in the Keynesian economic theory of modern monetary theory. And we went with that in 2008, 2009 to get us through that crisis. But then we heavily relied on our ability to create wealth and create money in 2020. And so did the rest of the world. And so basically what has happened is this global pandemic and global economic shutdown has really brought about the economic conditions that have made America the weakest economically we have ever been, is what my professional opinion is. And it is making these BRICS nations have all of the cards in their hands. We do not hold the cards in America right now. We just don't. We are the weakest. And what you're seeing now and what the analysis is telling us now is that we are on the precipice of a global sovereign debt crisis. And it is global. And Dinesh, it's so interconnected between countries, because since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001, and America really just became its consumer, it's a producer, we're the consumer. We obviously have so much lost autonomy of self-sufficiency because of that. But we are really beholden to them, economically speaking, even just pharmaceuticals. And we didn't learn that lesson in 2020. We didn't reroute supply chains and start domestically producing our medications again. We learned nothing. And now we are at the precipice of, unfortunately, this sovereign global debt crisis, which the analysis economically, Dinesh, I know I've got a lot here, so I'll cut this off now. But I will just tell you that the analysis is showing that the Federal Reserve would have to do, and I'm talking immediately now, about four successive rate cuts in order to prevent this crisis from imploding upon itself. And that's just not going to happen, because even Powell, with his comments last week at the FOMC meeting, was very hawkish. And the reason he's very hawkish is because if he acts anything other than hawkish, the market is going to say, what does he know that he's not sharing? And you could see that collapse the dollar. So if the Fed pivots and starts to cut, you're looking at potentially hyperinflation and the dollar being dumped. We have African leaders already telling their citizens to go ahead and dump the dollar. We have the Trilateral Commission, which is a globalist organization, as you know, saying that 2023 is the very first year of the New World Order, as a lot of these countries are moving to central bank digital currencies. And as you know, the Federal Reserve has launched, and this has been something I've been bringing up for a long time, but the Federal Reserve is now announcing that their FedNow digital dollar, central bank digital currency, will be live July of this year. So it almost looks like a setup to a global implosion of the current fiat debt system, moving us onto kind of unilaterally a central bank digital currency platform.
Do you think in the wake of all this, Rebecca, that it's, well, I mean, it's, first of all, it seems to me sound advice for people to call you, but isn't it also good advice for people to say, let's be really careful about many of us over many, many years would just habitually put money into the market. The idea is that long term, the market's going to be fine. There's going to be some ups and downs. But I think what you're saying is that there are some fundamental structural changes taking place, and you not need to have maybe a much more cautious strategy because of the political and fiscal irresponsibility that we have shown as a country to put ourselves in this dangerous situation. Is that a correct reading of what you're saying?
It's 100% correct. We as Americans have to go into a short-term mode here. It's not the normal assessment of a portfolio. It's not the normal, hey, what can I grow in? What sector of equities? What bond sectors? Not what fixed income. This is a little bit of a carve out of normal portfolio management, in which we are looking more for bridge assets, assets that will take us from the existing system, that really will attain true value and that will still have intrinsic value in the new system. Even even if they are revalued, it's relative. So if I've got a person who's all in equities and bonds and a normal portfolio, and then I have a person who is in commodities and who's got some hard assets, this portfolio is going to, obviously, if we go through this global sovereign debt crisis and transition to a new system, the traditional portfolio is going to be decimated. It is certainly overbought, overvalued. Like I said, it's untied to any real true hard asset values that we actually organically have. So you're going to see traditional portfolios. You're going to see, unfortunately, I would call it a black swan event. And then on the other side, the bridge assets, what we're trying to do is relatively make our clients better so that assets that are still intrinsically valuable, even if they're revalued, if you look around at the rest of America that were in equities and bonds, you're going to be so much better off because your assets retain value, even if there's a new leveling of who is wealthy after this happens, because that is exactly what will happen. We will have a reorganization of wealth in society and different groups will come out ahead of other groups. And so it is a very challenging time, Dinesh, for sure.
Wow. Folks, you got to be prepared. And Rebecca Welzer, thank you very much for coming and sharing this wisdom with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Just when you thought it couldn't get better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow have launched My Mattress Topper 2.0. The new 3-inch MyPillow mattress topper is made up of three unique layers. Layer one, MyPillow patented foam, which provides superior support and durability. Layer two, transitional foam, which provides optimal comfort, evenly distributes body weight, and helps relieve pressure points. And layer three, the cover, made from a special material to keep your body temperature regulated through the night. This MyPillow mattress topper is washable and dryable, made in the USA, comes with a 10-year warranty, a 60-day money-back guarantee. The incredible 3-inch mattress topper is as low as $219.59 with promo code Dinesh. So go ahead, call 800-876-0227. Again, that number, 800-876-0227, or just go to MyPillow.com. But either way, don't forget to use the promo code, which is D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. I'd like to talk about the mass protests that we've been seeing in Israel. Now, these are portrayed as spontaneous protests. They're not really spontaneous. They are organized by the left. Israel, like the United States, is a very divided society. And we see this in the status of Netanyahu. This is the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. By the way, his son, Yair, was on the podcast here several weeks ago. And Yair kind of previewed an issue that has now come front and center. Yair talked about the fact that one of the great opponents of Netanyahu, the people who are trying to get him and get him on corruption and sort of prevent him from being able to be an effective leader or even run for prime minister. By the way, all of this is sort of very interestingly evocative of Trump, where the left is trying to create a situation, judicial proceedings, arrests, indictments that'll prevent Trump from being able to run in 2024. And Yair goes, this is exactly what they're trying to do to my dad in Israel. Well, it turns out that the Prime Minister Netanyahu is very well aware of this. He's also very well aware of the fact that you have a very weird situation in Israel where you have a Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court is not like the American Supreme Court in that the Israelis don't have a written constitution. So think about that. What does our court do now? Our Supreme Court in the United States is mainly aimed at looking at laws that are passed by the legislature and deciding if those laws are unconstitutional. But unconstitutional by what standard? The standard, of course, is the Constitution. And so the Supreme Court has a basis, a kind of super law, which it can use to override laws passed even by the House and the Senate and signed by the President. But in Israel, you don't have that kind of a written constitution. Now, sure, the Supreme Court is supposed to be part of the Israeli system of checks and balances, but it's a lot more problematic when the Supreme Court in Israel is striking down laws without any written constitutional basis. You know, in America, you might have a judge that misreads the Constitution or interprets it in too elastic a way or thinks that it's a living Constitution that itself adapts. But it's a whole different thing to operate with no Constitution at all and say, listen, I'm striking down this law because, Well, because I say so, because I'm the court, because I'm claiming that I have the authority. Well, who gave you that authority? On what basis did what is the democratic underpinning of a judiciary of this sort? So the reforms being proposed by Netanyahu would curtail the power of the court. It would curtail, it would change the makeup of the court. So the court is no longer largely, it's not entirely, but largely a self-perpetuating body. Existing court members get to nominate others for the court. So what you have is a emergence of a kind of elite class of judicial officials, by the way, heavily slanted to the left. And the candidates that enter into the judicial system are often coming out of left-wing law schools. So in this respect, Israel really closely resembles the United States. There's a pipeline of left-wing fanatics that are being fed into the Israeli court. And basically, Netanyahu goes, this is fundamentally undemocratic. We need to change the system of how court members are chosen. And we also have to limit the court's ability to just strike down laws because they say so. And so this is what the reforms are about. But the left is able to use this as an attack on the independence of the judiciary. And the left was able to mobilize a lot, well, certainly in the media, but also a lot of people on the street shutting down bridges. There were some people in the Israeli Defense Department, the Israeli Reserves. We won't serve. We will step down. We are going on strike. And so all of this was going on. And the pressure appears at least temporarily to have worked. Now, it has worked to a limited point. Netanyahu has basically said, look, I'm going to put this idea on hold temporarily. And the temporarily is not like for the foreseeable future. Apparently, it is a short-term hold while there's a kind of a reassessment that is made. Obviously, in these sorts of situations, ideally, you want to moderate the fractures in the society by seeing if you can figure out some sort of a workable middle ground. In other words, if Netanyahu can say, listen, even my critics concede that there is something inherently problematic with a court that is in this sense responsive to, well, nobody, not even answerable to the people, not answerable to the, not answerable to a constitution, not answerable to the parliament. So there needs to be some reform made, but maybe the Netanyahu reforms go too far, and so Netanyahu is able to work something out. I don't know where all of this is going to go. The Israeli Defense Minister, Yoav Gallant, apparently challenged Netanyahu and said, in effect, that he disagreed with Netanyahu's proposals. And Netanyahu said, okay, well, if you disagree, you're not going to be in my government. So the defense minister was removed, was fired. That may have been the trigger for some of these protests across Israel. So Israel, like the United States, is a divided society, a society in some turmoil. But one thing I will say is that it's got a lot better man at the helm than we do. Don't like aches and pains? Neither do I. Debbie and I started taking Relief Factor a couple of years ago. The difference we've seen in our joints, nothing short of amazing. Aches and pains are basically gone thanks to this 100% drug-free solution called Relief Factor. How does it work? Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor swear by it. They order more because it works for them. Debbie is a true believer. She can now do the exercises that for a long time she wasn't able to do. So Relief Factor has been a real game changer for her, her aunt, other members of our family, Mike here in the studio, and for many other people. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call the new number 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That number again, 800-4-RELIEF, or go to relieffactor.com and you'll feel the difference. What is wrong with the publishing community? I'm thinking of the community of American and Western publishing houses like HarperCollins and so on. It's a community that I once understood because it's a community that revered the written word. And it's a community that would have been outraged at the idea that you could take works that were produced in earlier generations or earlier times and then just rewrite them. change them. This is being now done in a fairly systematic way. This is what makes all of this so disturbing. These incidents did occur in the past, but they were very, very exceptional and rare. I spoke a few weeks ago on the podcast about the children's public writer Roald Dahl and the rewriting of his works. Apparently, there's been some rewriting going on of Ian Fleming's James Bond novels. Now, it doesn't really matter if you're talking about a classic children's writer or even a kind of pulp novelist. I'm actually here to talk about the latest news, which is, quote, this is coming from The Guardian. In England, Agatha Christie novels reworked to remove potentially offensive language. Wow. And I, you know, loved Agatha Christie growing up. Read probably 24 of her detective stories. I like the ones particularly with the Belgian detective Hercule Poirot. Not so familiar with the Miss Marple mysteries, but those are very popular. Also, published over, by the way, over 40 years. Apparently, she started writing about 1920 through 1976. And I was aware that the Agatha Christie novel, one of her novels, based on a nursery rhyme, had the N-word in the title. And so they changed it to 10 Little Indians. And then they realized over time, well, Indians is a little offensive too. So they changed that title to, and then there were none. But this was the title of a book. And it was sort of the thing that you saw when you walked into the bookstore. But now apparently HarperCollins has been going through Agatha Christie's novels and changing them. So, for example, if she talks about a character and refers to them as black, well, because it's a black character, or Jewish, or gypsy, these words are now being removed. The word oriental is taken out. The word natives is replaced with the word local. Here's a classic example. This is from a great novel by Agatha Christie, 1937, Hercule Poirot novel called Death on the Nile. In fact, there's a pretty good movie of that same name based on the novel. And a woman named Mrs. Allerton talks about a group of children who are kind of pestering her. And she says something very likely that a Victorian or Victorian-ish woman would say. They come back and stare and stare, and their eyes are simply disgusting, and so are their noses. And I don't believe I like children. A very Agatha Christie line, beautifully written, by the way. And this is now stripped down to, they come back and stare and stare, and I don't believe I really like children, with the middle part of it kind of removed. Now, this, I think, is atrocious. Because if you want to take an Agatha Christie novel and say, I'm going to subject it to a sort of a critique, and I'm going to look at its vocabulary, I'm going to recognize that its vocabulary, by the way, the vocabulary of all writers is to a large degree a product of their time. Shakespeare writes the way he does because he was an Elizabethan writing around the year 1600. And so Shakespeare, to that degree, is a product of his time. Imagine going through Shakespeare's works and rewriting them. I mean, could anything more sacrilegious and outrageous? I mean, I guess maybe I feel strongly about this being an English major and someone who was brought up from a very young age on all this literature. But I think the very act is an act of literary vandalism. It is, and it reflects a brutish temper on the part. Now, it's one thing if you have woke activists who know nothing about literature. You'll often have people walking into a field. They're ignorant of the field. They go, let's rewrite this. Let's rewrite that. Kind of like someone who walks into an art gallery. They know nothing about the portraits on the wall. They're like, I would have redone it this way. Well, yeah, but that's why your painting is not on the wall. So the point being that what you have here is a philistinism that is not just confined to activist thugs on the street, Antifa, BLM types, but is now being exercised by the leadership of publishing houses that are the custodians of these works of literature. And again, broadly speaking, Agatha Christie, Roald Dahl, this is literature. This is part of our corpus. Some of it is more kind of high literature. Some of it is more popular literature. Some of it's more adventure stories and so on. But the very idea of going back and rewriting these novels in this way, I think is not only aesthetically, but also morally abhorrent. Debbie and I started eating better this year. We're on the road to losing some weight. But one of the few foods we can't seem to get enough of, and it's a requirement, are veggies. Now, what better way to get all your fruits and veggies than by taking Balance of Nature? Balance of Nature is sourced from 31 whole fruits and vegetables. You'll get maximum nutrition with their star product right here. Fruits and veggies in a capsule. So easy. We not only look better, but we feel better too with lots of added energy that Balance of Nature gives us. Start your journey to better health right now. Take advantage of Balance of Nature's New Year's offer, which is $25 off plus free fiber and spice with your first preferred order of fruits and veggies when you use discount code America. The offer can end at any time, so act now. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com. Use discount code America. Drawing on my book, What's So Great About Christianity, I'm discussing the philosopher Immanuel Kant and the limits of reason. Now, Kant said that he showed the limits of reason in order to make room for faith. In other words, to show that reason, even stretched to its outermost limit, cannot apprehend reality itself. Instead, reason can only apprehend appearances. And the error of realism is to confuse appearances with reality, to confuse our experience of things with, as Kant puts it, things in themselves. Now, a lot of times people who are so-called empiricist critics of Kant think that Kant is getting it wrong because empiricism begins with the world as it is. But see, Kant's point is, no, you're not. You're not beginning with the world as it is. You're beginning only with the world as you experience it, and you are muddling the world as you experience it with the world as it is. That is the classic error. That is the critical distinction that Kant makes between the noumenon and the phenomenon. Now, there's an objection to Kant which needs to be considered, and this is the most likely sort of thoughtful objection, and that is, wait a minute, Kant, there's obviously a real world out there because all of us, human beings, seem to experience the same reality. We live in a shared world, and therefore the world has got to be real. It's got to be out there. Our senses have got to be reliable because we see the same stuff. You and I both see the same tree. You and I both see the same pen. You and I both see the same lamp in the room, and so on. But when you think about it, you realize that this is no answer to Kant because what Kant is saying is that, of course, we experience reality in the same way. That is because all of us have the same kind of perceptual equipment. It's sort of like saying you have a camera and I have a camera, and your camera takes the same kind of picture as my camera. And the answer is, well, yeah, but that's because in both cases, it's a camera. If you have a camera and I have a tape recorder, then your camera will take a picture and my tape recorder will record sound, and we'll get a different result. So all that the objection proves is that we live in a shared world of experiences. It doesn't prove that our senses are giving us some kind of unfiltered access to reality beyond appearance. That's the core to Kant's point. Now, the biologist E.O. Wilson tries a little different kind of objection to Kant, and he says, hey, listen, with science, we're getting what he calls new faculties. We're getting really complicated microscopes that allow us to see really small things. He goes, quote, with the aid of appropriate instruments, we can now view the world with butterfly eyes, with receivers and transformers and nighttime photography. We can experience the world in the same way, almost in the same way as a bat. But all of this, I think, is, again, beside the point. It's no objection, not an effective objection to Kant. Why? Because Kant would say, well, yeah, look, you can look through a microscope, but what are you looking through a microscope with? You're looking through a microscope with your eyes. And so, again, your access to reality is limited by the fact that you are using this particular, quote, camera, namely your eyes and your retina and so on. Yeah, you can use nighttime photography, but again, you're using your eyes to observe this nighttime photography. Yeah, you can use generators and detectors, but you're still using your five senses to read and hear and interpret what those instruments say. In other words, our human apparatus of perception conditions the entire field of our experiences. And this has always been so. It is the case now, and it will always be the case in the future as long as we remain human. That's Kant's point. The problem of reason, according to Kant, is in its full dimension, insoluble. There are permanent and inescapable limits to human reason, and it is foolish to go on pretending otherwise. So this is a really stunning idea that reason is enclosed by the perceptual limits of our senses. Now, all of this may seem a little far out, a little outlandish. In fact, I would say, quite honestly, it's taken me several years to fully take Kant's philosophy on board. When you first read it, and it's difficult to read. Kant is not an easy writer. You have to read it once and read it again, and maybe even read some commentaries to help illuminate points that you might have missed. And even after you've done all that, you've got to sort of sit on it and let it settle in your mind. There are other ideas that are like this. Einstein's relativity is similar. It's an idea that you can grasp. I think any person of moderate or average or above average intelligence can grasp it, but it takes an effort. And even when you made the effort, you then have to let it sit with you for a while for the idea to take a hold of your mind. And let's remember, Kant admits that his ideas are difficult. That's why he talks about performing a kind of Copernican revolution in philosophy, because we're so used to looking at the world and going, yeah, that's the world out there. That's the way things are. And Kant goes, no, that's the way things appear to you. Or to put it differently, that is the way things appear to us as human beings. But there's a huge difference between the way things appear to us and the way things are in themselves.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.